Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021.
Today, bonds. And as I told you last week, we will have a quiz that will begin at 2:45. You can use your computers, obviously, if you've got a Calc Virtual TI and notes as you need to. And that will be 20 minutes, 30 for the accommodation, but it will begin at 2:45 again. Ow. Dang. There we go. Let me get this. Trying to get this adjusted. And we are fast coming up on the midterm, which will cover chapters 1-7. But before we do anything else today, we'll have a look at the numbers and see what they have to say about how the world is going. Let me get this out of here. Okay. So, as far as the day goes, what do you say? Is this a... Well, let me turn on the overhead. Sorry about that. Okay. Well, let's find someone who's interested in this. So, sir, is this a good day or a bad day on the street? Yeah, it's a pretty tepid day. It's a slow day on the street. Nothing spectacular. The market is looking for a direction. You had a little bit of a down on the S&P 500. The Dow was up some. And then the riskiest portfolio, which would be the NASDAQ, a full exchange, that thing just wasn't having a good day at all. It's still down. Oh, it's still down almost 0.5%. It was down a lot more earlier in the day, but it's still down about 0.5%. It's just not a very pleasant day on the street. It's just one of the grouchy days. There's not really much that you can say, well, this is why this is happening. It's just one of those things. Come on. Okay, now over here, let me just do something here. Someone's saying that audio is not going, so let me kill this off here for just a minute and get the audio running. Echo, select a microphone. Come on. Select a, really? Echo canceling speakerphone, echo, microphone. Okay, can you hear it now? I've got my, okay, good. I apologize. There's so many different things here that I have to remember that it kills me every time something gets me. So let me go back here to the screen. Okay, so again, this is a day that's just not having it. It was kind of directionless. However, if we come over here, there you go. Crude has made it to 75 a barrel. It's broken that neckline. Now, what's really creepy here is, or what's kind of scary, an analyst at Goldman Sachs, he's a hydrocarbons analyst, he just put it out, I guess it was last night or this morning, that the next neckline is at $90 a barrel. That's where they're aiming at now, is 90, which I had mentioned before, I believe, and now you got a heavy saying, yeah, that's where we're going to go. Now, here, gas prices are pretty cheap this morning, but you'll see them popping up here probably by tomorrow. They'll make it up, and you'll see maybe $3.29 a gallon. But if we get up to $90 a barrel, that's probably going to point to about $3.99 to $4.29 a gallon of gasoline. So stock up on gasoline early, fill up some cans if you got some cans, fill them up with some gasoline because it's going to get expensive. Now, again, most of that, part of it's because the economies of the world are cranking back up again, building up, as we move to the, it doesn't look like it, but believe it or not, we are actually probably in the last 9 months of the pandemic. Those who wish to die will be killed, and then everyone else will be okay. We'll get out of it. And so we're seeing the what happens before that is that industrial growth starts to pick back up again. And so that's happening around the world and here in the United States too. We'll be fine. And so there is good reason to believe that we're going to use a lot more oil. Oil prices are going to go up. We're also going to have inflation that will become a hyperinflation will light up. It's already doing that. And we're going to go into a rather frenetic growth period for a few years, for better or worse. Whether we live through it or not is another matter. Gold and silver, meh. But if we look over here at the 10-year bond, there you are, is that the bond price is going down as the, I'm sorry, yeah, the bond yield is going up 2 basis points, which would mean that the bond price is going down. Bond price going down would indicate that there is sell-off on the bonds. Well, interestingly enough, this is an example. See, that's a very small movement. So you won't expect a lot of money to flow somewhere else. It looks like probably what's going on as much as anything else is that money is flowing into very high quality stocks. And it's also probably some of that is going into cash, which is a little more difficult to see. Now, the Financial Times, it started out good and it just went down from there. London just couldn't get a break today. By the end, though, it managed to rally a little bit, but right before the bell, it dropped back off. If you look at the Nikkei, it dropped, and then there was a bull rally going into the midday, and then that bull rally was just smacked down by the bears. They just hit that thing hard. Why? I don't know. I don't follow the Asian market that much, but something really ticked off the bears there, especially after that bull rally. They just came in and slapped the crap out of it. But one way or the other, that was the markets today. Let me come off this and switch back over here. This one. I'm going to do a couple of stupid TED tricks before I get fully started. One thing that you want to know, remember always about bonds, is that bonds have a face value. They have an FV. There is an FV. And unless I say differently, that is $1,000. So bonds are denominated in $1,000 increments. When you buy a bond, at the end of the life of the bond, you will be paid $1,000 per bond that you bought. So we base everything on thousands. So I would say that, so in other words, 987, that's a bond that is selling for $987. If it's selling below 1,000, we say that it is at a discount to par. A discount to par. Less than 1,000, discount to par. If it's selling for more than 1,000, it's selling at a premium to par. Par is 1,000. Now, $1,000, if a bond is selling at exactly 1,000, well, that's kind of a special situation. It's where the market thinks that the coupon is exactly right. Bonds pay a coupon. That's the interest thing. And as I said before, like you, sir, when you buy a car, your payments are going to, part of it will go to the interest and part of it will go to the principal balance. You amortize and service the debt. But you, madam, a corporation, you borrow, you issue a bond. You don't pay anything on the $1,000 until the very end. All you do is pay the interest along the way. You service the debt, but you do not amortize it. And then at the end, you've got $1,000. Yes?
So that's the difference between what?
When you actually buy a bond, if you buy it for $987, you've bought a bond that was selling at a discount to par. If you paid $1,015, well, I just bought a bond that was at a premium to par. And that's just our terminology for it. But if you bought a bond that was at exactly $1,000, that would be selling at par.
About like bonds that you do pay part of the principal during the life of the bond.
That's only with consumer bonds. Okay. With corporate and government, it is never that way. Interestingly enough, you decided that you were going to buy a car, so you come to me, the bank. What you did was you sold me a bond. That's what you did. You actually sold me a bond. I paid the price, what you wanted as a loan. I bought it from you. The price of that bond was what I lent you. So in that case, as you can see, consumer loan is a very different thing. It doesn't have a face value of $1,000. It has whatever the custom value is. When we calculate the payments, part of it goes to the interest, part of it goes to the principal. But if you, that corporation, do the same thing, you come to a bank and you issue me a bond and I buy it from you, you write a bond and I buy the bond, that you're going to pay just the interest we agreed to, the coupon. We even call it a coupon instead of an interest rate. We call it a coupon. Now, here's another thing. And I got a wonderful story about this nonsense, too. Bonds actually have these prices, like a 987, 1,012. Those are prices of bonds. That's what you would pay. You call up your broker and say, I'd like to buy one IBM 2032 whatever bond. And you'd pay, like $1,003 or whatever the price of the bond is. However, bonds do not quote this way. They quote on the 100, a tenth of the price. So you would actually buy a bond, like if you're going to pay the bond's price is $987, you would actually see a quote of 98.7, or we'd say 98.70 on the 100. This confuses some people. Is that the quote is a tenth of the price. You're going to pay the price. And I'll tell you my favorite story. Many years back, there was this fellow I knew. He was an old rich guy. He'd been an optometrist. He'd done a lot of gambling. He'd made a lot of money in his life. And he thought he was a genius investor before anyone had computer software. Hell, before most people even had computers. He was doing all these analytics, and he swore he was a genius, but he never bought bonds. And so he decided he was going to buy 10 bonds at 99.12. He saw the price, he saw that 99.12, and he said, he put in an order, phone call order. Back then that was all they did, phone call order for 10 bonds. It was 99.17 was what it was. And he calls me up about near the end of the day, just having a fit, cussing and swearing, threatening he's going to kill someone. He was a drunk and a nasty guy. He was going to kill someone because he had been charged close to $10,000. They charged me $9,917 in a commission, and they were only $99 bonds. Frank, you dumbass. Those were the quotes. Yeah, what of it? That's a tenth of the price. Well, who thought of that? When did this crap come? Like the 1700s. What? It was in the 1700s, you see, because at the very early, you know, before sunrise every day on Wall Street, these printing houses, like the Dow Company's printing service, would print these massive broadsheets. And all the brokers would come in and buy these. And all the stock quotes, bond quotes were in columns all down these giant broadsheets. They saved column space by quoting at a tenth of the price. Instead of in thousands and pennies, they quoted in hundreds. And so that was where the tradition of the quote came from. And it's still there to this day. Now, another one that was, you'll hear me even trip up on this one, is that stocks used to not be quoted in dollars and cents. And I'm looking, even 10 years ago, I would have had students who would have said, that's right, but you've never seen one. Back in that our time, back before, I don't know, maybe it was 10 years ago, it seems like it was more recent than that, we quoted stocks in fractions. Like, I'd buy 32 and a half, or 5 3/4, or 10 3/8. They were always fractions. And they were, in the broadsheets, the fraction was, in some of them, it was assumed that the denominator was 16th. So you might see something that was a 5 1/2. But what you would see at 5.50, it would be 5 1/2. But in the sheet, it would be 5, and then there would be a space and an 8 1/16. So we would say sometimes, well, that only moved up by a teenth. That was a way of saying that it was a fraction of it was just a fractional movement of the security for the day. Anyway, if you ever get on Jeopardy, maybe, or a Trivial Pursuit, you may be able to rock if they get to a stock trivia category. But anyway. I mentioned this early, and I've got to emphasize this now. You, madam, if you borrow from me, you are issuing me a debt security. I am buying, I am investing in that debt security. In technical terms, loans are nothing but securities with buying and selling transactions. You, sir, decide that you're going to borrow on a home loan from me. Well, what you do is you are actually the writer of the debt paper. This will be a bond because it's a very long-term instrument. Bonds more than like 15, 20 years. So you're going to issue me a bond. It is a special kind of bond. It's a collateralized bond because it's backed by the home. We'll call that a mortgage bond. But I, the banker, am going to buy that loan from you. You are the writer of the loan. You wrote the loan. You say, no, I didn't. I walked in the bank and the bank had it for me. No, all the bank does is make it written on your behalf so that everything's right, correct on it. Then you're going to sign it first as the writer. Then it's going to come across to me and I will sign it as the buyer of that bond. The price that we have negotiated is what you need to borrow to buy the house. So you are the issuer, the writer, the seller, the borrower. Issue, writer, seller, borrower. Issuer, writer, seller, borrower. One more time. Issuer, writer, seller, borrower. That's you. I am the buyer, the purchaser, the lender, the investor. The buyer, the purchaser, the lender, the investor. The buyer, the purchaser, the lender, the investor. Now, you notice I did those terms 3 times each? Guess how likely it is that is going to be on a quiz or an exam. But here's the funny thing, though, is, do you see how the terminology here is different from what most people would imagine? In common everyday experience, people wouldn't imagine that when they borrow money, they're actually the writer of a security. They wouldn't see the world that way. That's part of this process of separating you and bringing you up to this level of business leadership. We see the world differently. We see it in our, in the way we see it, we can then fit it together with all the other parts of our world. So in other words, when a company wants to raise a lot of money, they could issue stock, ownership interest, or they could issue bonds. And then there are investors. There are equity investors who would buy stock. There are debt investors who would buy bonds. Now, again, keep that, remember that thing, face value, unless I say differently. The face value of corporate debt or government debt is $1,000. So in your calculator, you'd always put a 1,000 as the FV, the face value, the future value, the kicker at the end, what have you. And government and corporate bonds work the same way. They work the same way. There are a couple of exceptions. But first, if I am talking about short-term debt, a year or less, we call that a bill. Yeah, go ahead. A bill is a short-term debt. So you, sir, well, you told me, well, I got my electric bill in the mail. Well, actually, no, you didn't. You got a memorandum. You were the issuer of the bill. The electric company bought your bill and allowed you to have service at your house, electrical service, for a month, accumulating that bill. And then they send you a memorandum. We bought from you a bill for the price of the electricity you used. Now, again, let me say this again. This one, it takes a while to get your mind wrapped around this. You are actually the issuer of a bill. When you get that thing in the mail, that's just a memorandum reminding you that some company bought a bill from you. Why is it a bill? Because you have to pay that thing within a short period of time. Why are you the issuer? Because you got the service. You got the equivalent of money, electricity. The investor, the cable company, the electric company, the mobile phone company, whatever, they allowed you to use money, the equivalent of money, of theirs. And now they're reminding you that you now have to pay it back. The face value of it is the amount of that bill. That one is rough, and it takes a while. On an exam or a quiz, the way I usually do it is something like, well, you borrowed such and such amount of money for such and such amount of time from so-and-so. What happened there? Well, you were the issuer, and he was a buyer, and all that kind of stuff. Let me go through this more, though. Bill is less than a year. Now, a note is between one. See, here's the thing. The lecture always proceeds for 40 years between 1 and 7 years for a note. Well, now, I mean, I'm seeing these 15-year issues that are called notes. I mean, it's a little fuzzy. I'm going to stick with 1 to 7 or 1 to 10 years, but Netflix issued a paper, $1.2 billion in paper, debt paper, a few years back, and they said those were 15-year notes. And I think that used to be called a bond. Well, bonds are definitely anything that's more than 20 years. Bonds can be 20, 25, 30. Hell, there's some that are 50. There are some 100-year bonds. Matter of fact, they're famous. There's a bond that doesn't have a maturity. It never pays off. It's an odd thing. It turns out This family, yeah.
Is that similar to not exactly, but is that similar to a perpetuity?
It is a perpetuity. It happened in Napoleonic France. Napoleon wanted to have one of his wars, and this very rich family lent the money, and the government would forever owe that money. And it would pay its the interest rate, the coupon, every year forever. Why did they do that? Because Napoleon figured, I'm never going to have the money to pay this off. So he made it an obligation for eternity for the French government. It was in the 21st century, the French government finally went to a court and asked them to nullify the debt. You can't make us pay this. Napoleon's government was like 10 governments back or 5 governments back. You know, we've gone through a lot since then. This is not even the same. And the court said, no, you can't cancel that. Napoleon made it, so you all owe it. And so they'll make another try. And if, I guess in another couple of decades, the government will try to get it canceled again. But and there's another. Yes, sometimes governments can cancel debt. I'll tell you a famous story about that. Personal story, somewhat, just tangentially. But okay, so you got bills, very short term. Then notes, intermediate term. And then bonds are long term. Let me do this to you. Can you tell me, this is a $1 bill. Can you tell me what it says up at the top there, the very top, Federal
Reserve Note?
Federal Reserve Note. Now, we call this a dollar bill, which would have meant that it was a very short-term debt. But that is a Federal Reserve Note, which would mean that it's an intermediate-term debt. You're thinking, wait a minute, what the hell is going on here? Here's how these work. You see, our government lives way, way beyond its means. It always has. Low, low taxes, high expenditures on everything from social services to war materiel. And so we need to borrow money. And so we issue paper at auctions. And we'll get back to that in a minute here. But at those auctions, the countries that have tons of American dollars, because we gave them American dollars for their cheap products, they'll come to the auctions. The Chinese, the Japanese, the Canadians, the Europeans, the Arabs, they come and they lend us money. However, they don't lend us all of it. The Federal Reserve lends the government a lot of money too. In other words, an agency of our government lends our government money. So how does the Federal Reserve have money to do this? They print these, which represent obligations. We owe you this money. So how do they pay it off? Well, it's due in, what, like 5 to 7 years, something like that? It's a note. Oh, they just print a couple more of them and give them. That's right. They just satisfy this one. They bring it back, they shred it, and they print some more in its place. And if they print too many more, that's quantitative easing, and that creates inflation because each one has less value than it did in the before it was shredded. Now, if that doesn't, you might, if there's something in the back of your mind, now wait a minute here, go back through that. No, I'm not going to go back through that because you got it right the first time. This is a Ponzi scheme, but as long as it, see, it's like the old cartoons, Wile E. Coyote would be chasing a roadrunner and the coyote would go off the cliff. As long as he didn't look down, everything was good. But if he looked down, pater. So please don't look down. That's how this works. It's not. I'm not meaning that as some conspiracy thing or the evil and the government's going to die tomorrow. Hell no, it works. As long as no one looks down. But here's the thing, though. There are some short-term debt instruments that work by a slightly different mechanism. See, normally a bond, a government issues a 30-year bond, okay? We pay the coupon 8%, 6%, whatever, based upon the face value. Let's say that the bond has a 5% coupon. It's a 20-year bond, okay? So whoever lends the money or whoever buys that bond from the original owner will get $50, 5% of $1,000. It's always based upon the par value. 5% of $1,000 for all those years. 20 years. And then at the end, one last $50 payment, and then the $1,000 paid back. That's a normal debt instrument. That's how they work. Now, obviously, if a company borrows, let's say, $100 million on, let's say, a 6% bond, then it would have to pay $6 million every year to the lenders, 6% of $100 million. And then one last time at the end of the life of the bond, at maturity, it would pay one last $6 million payment, and then it would pay back the $100 million. Now, obviously, the lenders are not going to rely on the company to have $100 million at the end of the life of the bond. They're going to require what's called some kind of a sinking fund. The company puts in money every year to make sure that well before the bond matures, the $100 million is there. Sinking funds, if you go heavier into accounting, there's a whole science to accounting for the sinking fund. Just know this, bond lenders aren't stupid. They're going to require that there's plenty of money there well before that bond matures. Okay, now, there is a kind of bond that is a special trick. They're short. And by the way, when I say bond, that's like a generic. I mean, you say that for anything. You'll say a generic bond, even if it's a bill or a note. But so forgive me if I slip into that. I try not to in a class like this. But I do sometimes. It's like there are these generic words that we use, like stock. Well, usually that means common stock, but it could mean preferred stock. So I say stock, and I should say common stock. I say, cat, and my cats get offended. The one says, I'm a Manx. The other one says, I'm a Russian blue. And the one back there says, I'm a street cat, and pulls out a switchblade and starts waving it at me. So... I say bond, and I don't always mean a bond. Here, these are bills, and there are a couple of oddballs in there. Now, there's one that's very popular with corporate America. It's called commercial paper, and I mentioned it before. Commercial paper, companies that are very big, very creditworthy, sometimes they'll need money for 30 days. So what they'll do is they'll issue commercial paper. It's a 30-day loan. And there's a huge market. I mean, there are lenders. They don't want their money hanging out there for a long time, but they love to lend their money for 30 days. Oh, Microsoft needs $60 million? Okay, 30 days. Now, the government, and different governments do this too, they also issue this short-term paper, 3, 6, 9. 1 year. Let me focus on the 1 year paper. Now, what has the Treasury bill? Let's say it's a 1 year Treasury bill, a T-bill. Not to be confused with a T-bone steak, which is delicious, but a T-bill. And this is true with commercial paper. They are called discount debt. You buy the bond from the government. You lend the government a little less than $1,000, and then in a year the government pays you back $1,000. So you buy this debt instrument at a discount to par. And where you make your money is on getting the $1,000 minus whatever you paid for it. That's how these bonds work. Now, the commercial paper works the same way. Like a company might borrow, might say, we will pay you back $100 million in 30 days. And what the lender does is lend them $99,990,000. In other words, a little bit less. And so in 30 days, the lender gets the bigger amount, and that extra is the interest. Discount bonds are just sort of an interesting animal. And there's an important lesson in a government one-year T-bill. Now, to set up what is about to happen here, anymore everything is electronic. There's no such thing as a physical platform for a lot of things, except for these stupid art shows that I do. But, you know, high-powered finance never happens in a physical room. Well, it does in for some things, but okay, when the government used to need to borrow money, they would hold treasury auctions in a physical location. A little bit fanciful, but not too far from the truth of it, is that the government would literally have all these different papers, like 20-year borrowings, paper. You could buy a 20-year treasury bond, a T-bond. They might have a bunch of 5-year treasury notes, T-notes. And literally, lenders would buy the paper. They would buy the paper. And there would be a coupon on it. You're going to get this for 20 years, 5 years, whatever. The T-bills, these 1 years, work differently. At a T-bill auction, the paper on the table would pay you $1,000 in a year. But you bought it for less than $1,000. So you made your money off the difference between what you bought it at and what the price was. So we're going to have an old-fashioned auction, the old days auction. And I am the hostess of the auction. My name is Mabel. And you are coming in for your very first purchase at an auction. Well, hello there, young man. You're new to these auctions, aren't you? You're here to buy some some treasury bills. I think we should start you with one treasury bill, and we got some lovely ones here on the table. This one goes with those eyes. My God, those eyes of yours are gorgeous. Here you go, sweetheart. Do you want one of these? Okay, now it's $1,000 you're going to get in a year. So we're right now, it looks like we've got about $975. So you want to buy one of these for $975? Of course you do. Earl! One-year T-bill, $975. Drag it through the garden, put it in a bag. Here you go, sweetie. And you leave. Well, you come back in a year. Well, first of all, look, the price, $975. What's the face? What's the face? Come on. $1,000. Always $1,000. My God, it's hot. It's so hot in here. If I had an apple in my mouth, I'd think I was at a luau. Is it hot in here? Interest. Okay, how much interest did you make? How much interest did he make? Dollars. Yeah. How much?
25?
Yes. Yes. I didn't want you to think that was complicated. Was it? Okay, 25. There's your yield. Okay, let's find the yield. He made $25. What did he invest? $975. Don't let me trick you into saying $1,000. It's not $1,000. It's $975. Now, if you take 25 divided by 975, you will get ...2.56% interest. A year later, well, there you are again. You just have just gotten your $1,000 back, and you're now one of our regulars here. I am so proud of you. It's time for you to buy another one.
Can I get one from the back this time?
Oh, wait a minute. You don't think you're going to pay me $975? And you look around. Well, I don't see any of the usual people who buy these. Demand for these bonds is pretty low, you say. And I look at you, why, you dirty dog. So you say, I'm going to pay $950. You see, because when the demand is low, if the Arabs and the Chinese and the Japanese and the Canadians don't show up at the auctions, then the prices are going to be lower because the demand is lower. But the face value is still 1,000. So this time, your interest is $50, and your yield is $50 on an investment of $950. And so your yield this time is 5.26%. Ma'am, when the price went down, what happened to the yield? Well, spank me Buddha. That's exactly right. What I've been saying all along. Price goes down, yield goes up. It's not magic, it's math. Prices go down, yields go up. That is how it works. Now, the discount bonds are the easiest place to show this, but this is true of any security whatsoever. The price and the yield are inversely related. Now, I want you to crank up, because you've got a quiz that opens in just a couple of minutes here, so get yourself hauling on that. And my audience that's in the live telecast out there, you too. Other than that, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.